Good evening and welcome to eBible Fellowship's Bible study in the book of 1 Samuel. Tonight is study number 103. And I'm going to begin reading in 1 Samuel 6, beginning in verses 19 and 20. And he smote the men of Beth Shemesh because they had looked into the ark of Jehovah. Even he smote of the people 50,000 and 70 men. And the people lamented because Jehovah had smitten many of the people with a great slaughter. And the men of Beth Shemesh said, Who is able to stand before this holy Jehovah God, and to whom shall he go up from us? Now, as we've been discussing in the last few studies, this historical occurrence of the ark coming back out of the land of the Philistines and returning to Israel is picturing the end of the Great Tribulation. And we know that because of the following reasons. First, it is the end of the 7 months period that the ark was in the land of the Philistines. And that 7 months is typifying the entire length or the complete duration of the Great Tribulation. Just as the 7 years in the days of Joseph, the 7-year famine typified the entire Great Tribulation, or the 70-year period that Judah came under assault by the Babylonians typified the entire Great Tribulation. The number 7, God is used again and again to represent the Great Tribulation period. So that's one reason that we can be sure that the 7 months is typifying the Great Tribulation. A second reason is the number of men that were killed, 50,070. Now, that number by itself doesn't really help us, but put together with the first two battles and the number of slain in those battles, it totals 84,070, or about 84,000. And that number 84 identifies with the end of the Great Tribulation, which occurred on May 21 of 2011. That was the 23rd full year of the Great Tribulation, the 8400th day. And so that's two things that give us strong evidence that what's taken place with these men being smitten as they looked into the Ark of Jehovah, is an event that is pointing spiritually to the beginning of Judgment Day. Now, a third thing is the removal of the mercy seat. In order to look into the Ark and to inspect the contents, these men first had to remove the mercy seat. Either it lifted up and latched, or they moved it aside. But either way, they removed the mercy seat that was completely covering the contents of the ark, and inside the ark was the two tables of stone that God wrote the Ten Commandments on. The law of God was in the ark. And by this action of removing the mercy seat, and that mercy seat we saw completely identifies with the Lord Jesus Christ. He is called the mercy seat in the New Testament. In Hebrews 9 verse 5, we find the word mercy seat, and it definitely is referring to the same mercy seat we read about here and elsewhere in the Old Testament. And that same Greek word translated as mercy seat is translated as propitiation in Romans 3:25. And so God is making the identification. He's linking Christ, who is the propitiation, the covering for sins, with the mercy seat that covered over the Ark of the Testament, the Ark of Jehovah. And so when these men move the mercy seat in order to look into the ark, it was as though they were removing the Lord Jesus Christ, the intercessor, the one who goes between God and man. And without Christ, then mankind is confronted directly with the law of God, and the wrath of God is upon him, because no man can be justified in the sight of God by the keeping of the law. So in other words, to sum it up, when they removed the cover of the ark, the mercy seat, it was a physical action. It actually happened in time, in history. These individuals literally moved the mercy seat cover from off the ark. But spiritually, it represents the removal of Christ, the removal of salvation, leaving mankind bare to face the wrath of an angry God, because now man's sins are exposed. The law of God is demanding vengeance. It is demanding satisfaction. And that's exactly what takes place on Judgment Day. And again, that would identify with the end of the Great Tribulation and the date of May 21. Judgment Day commenced, and Christ no longer stands in the way. He no longer intercedes, because the work of Christ in seeking out his sheep has been accomplished. All of those whose names were written in the Lamb's Book of Life have been found and safely brought home to the fold, and all of the elect have been saved. Now the Lord may begin the judgment process on all the unsaved people of the world. So that's a third reason. Now, a fourth reason that we can see that this passage identifies completely with the day of judgment is found in verse 20. And I'll read it again. And the men of Beth Shemesh said, "Who is able to stand before this holy Jehovah God, and to whom shall he go up from us?" Now, that question that these men ask is a question that also is asked in the book of Revelation. In Revelation chapter 6, and I'll read just a couple of verses so we can see where the emphasis is. In Revelation 6, verse 12, "And I beheld when he had opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as blood, and the stars of heaven fell unto the earth, even as a fig tree casteth her untimely figs when she is shaken of a mighty wind. And the heaven departed as a scroll when it is rolled together, and every mountain and island were moved out of their places." And I'll stop there. And we can see from this language the relationship between this passage and what we read, for instance, in Matthew 24:29. "Immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give its light." In other words, Revelation 6 is describing the end of the Great Tribulation, just as Matthew 24:29 tells us that immediately after the tribulation, the end of the tribulation, there is a darkened sun, which is exactly what we find here in Revelation 6. So we find the relationship between Revelation 6 and Matthew 24:29, but also that's the context of 1 Samuel 6. At the end of the 7 months, we've seen that that also identifies with the end of the Great Tribulation. Well, now let's keep reading in verse 15 of Revelation 6. "And the kings of the earth, and the great men, and the rich men, and the chief captains, and the mighty men, and every bondman and every free man, hid themselves in the dens and in the rocks of the mountains, and said to the mountains and rocks, Fall on us, and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne, and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of his wrath is come, and who shall be able to stand? There is the same question posed, and the context is clear. That question is being asked on the day of judgment, the day of the wrath of the Lamb. And so the men of Beth Shemesh are asking the same thing. Who is able to stand before this holy Jehovah God? We see how these two passages relate. And so we're very confident, we're sure, that what we're reading here is God giving us a glimpse into Judgment Day. And once again, it identifies with the removal of salvation as the mercy seat was removed. And without the mercy seat, well, there is no mercy. There is only the judgment based upon the law of God condemning sinners. For no man can stand in God's sight if the Lord marks iniquities, we read in Psalm 130. If thou shouldest mark iniquities, who shall stand? And that's exactly what God does on Judgment Day. He marks iniquities. He's coming to hold mankind responsible and accountable for all their transgressions against his law. Well, all right, we've gone over that enough, and now we're going to continue. Let's read verse 21 into 1 Samuel chapter 7, the first couple of verses. And they sent messengers to the inhabitants of Kirjath-Jearim, saying, the Philistines have brought again the ark of Jehovah. Come ye down and fetch it up to you. And the men of Kirjath-Jearim came and fetched up the ark of Jehovah and brought it into the house of Abinadab in the hill, and sanctified Eleazar his son to keep the ark of Jehovah. And it came to pass, while the ark abode in Kirjath-Jearim, that the time was long, for it was 20 years, and all the house of Israel lamented after Jehovah. And I'll stop reading there. Now, we have historically the situation where the men of Beth Shemesh, they had had enough, just like the Philistines had had enough. The Philistines thought it was wonderful at first that they had captured the Ark of the Lord, and yet it turned out to be a disaster for them as God smote them with plagues and emerods, and many of them died, until finally the people were crying out to their lords, the lords of the Philistines, that they might take away the Ark of God. And so the Philistines developed the plan of returning the Ark with a trespass offering. And it was returned to Israel, to the land of Beth Shemesh. And the inhabitants of Beth Shemesh initially rejoiced to see the Ark. And they also felt that it was a wonderful thing that the Ark had come back to Israel, and especially had returned to them. They were no one in particular in relationship to the keeping of the Ark. It had always been in Shiloh, and now they had an opportunity to take on a special significance amongst the people of Israel. The Ark was now associated and identified with Beth Shemesh. But, however, due to their foolishness and their wickedness in daring to look into the ark, God smote them grievously. Over 50,000 men died, and that could have been a large portion of their total population. We're not told how many people lived in that area, but 50,000 is a large number no matter what the population. And quickly they determine, oh no, we cannot stand, we cannot abide to have the ark amongst us. It's too holy, it's too sacred. And that's why they ask that question, who is able to stand before this holy Jehovah God? And they quickly send messengers to the inhabitants of Kirjath-Jearim. Now we're going to take a look at Kerjath Jearim, and we'll see how that plays a role in this whole thing, and what the significance of the Ark traveling to Kerjath Jearim is. But first, we have to actually present a problem. We're not going to solve it. There is a possibility. There is a possible answer, a solution to this dilemma. But first, let's just point out the problem. And the problem is where it says in verse 2 of 1 Samuel 7, "And it came to pass while the ark abode in Kerjath Jearim that the time was long, for it was 20 years, and all the house of Israel lamented after Jehovah." Now let's take a look at the timeline. We know that Eli was judge of Israel from 1108 BC when Samson died, and then Eli became judge, until 1068 BC for a 40-year period. And then the ark was taken by the Philistines, and Eli died in the year 1068. 7 months later, the ark returned to Israel in the year 1067 BC. And what we read of these events, the men of Beth Shemesh looking into the ark, must have occurred in 1067 BC. And when they sent messengers to the people of Kerjath Jearim to take the ark, and then they did come, and they brought it to their city, and they placed the ark in the house of Abinadab in the hill. And according to 1 Samuel 7:2, the ark abode in Kerjath Jearim in Abinadab's house for 20 years. And that would mean from 1067 until 1047 BC. All right, so you might be wondering, what's the problem? Well, the problem is seen when we turn to 2 Samuel. Let's go over there, 2 Samuel. And I'm going to read first chapter 5, verses 3 to 5, just so we get an idea of the timing when the ark is actually brought to Jerusalem. 2 Samuel 5, verse 3, "So all the elders of Israel came to the king to Hebron, and King David made a league with them in Hebron before Jehovah. And they anointed David king over Israel. David was 30 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 40 years. In Hebron, he reigned over Judah 7 years and 6 months. And in Jerusalem, he reigned 33 years over all Israel and Judah." And I'll stop reading there. Now, the timeline for David is that he was born in 1037 BC, and he became king in Hebron in 1007 BC. And then he reigned in Hebron for 7 years and 6 months, which would take us to 1000 or perhaps 999 BC, depending on which month. And so David began to reign in Jerusalem 1000 or 999 BC. And then while in Jerusalem, he determines to get the ark and bring it into Jerusalem. And we read about that in chapter 6, beginning in verse 1. "Again, David gathered together all the chosen men of Israel, 30,000. And David arose and went with all the people that were with him from Baal of Judah." Now, Baal of Judah is another name given to Kerjath Jearim. And you can see that in 1 Chronicles 13:6. That this is just another way of referring to the same city. "To bring up from thence the ark of God, whose name is called by the name of Jehovah of hosts that dwelleth between the cherubims. and they set the ark of God upon a new cart and brought it out of the house of Abinadab that was in Gibeah, and Uzzah and Ahio, the sons of Abinadab, drave the new cart, and they brought it out of the house of Abinadab, which was at Gibeah, accompanying the ark of God, and Ahio went before the ark. And then we know the rest of the story. Uzzah puts forth his hand because the oxen stumbled and shook the cart, and the Lord struck him for daring to touch the ark. And we won't get into that. The important thing here is that David is getting the ark from the house of Abinadab in Kirjath-Jearim. And yet, in 1 Samuel 7, it said that the ark was 20 years in the house of Abinadab in Kirjath-Jearim. And that would take us from 1067 to 1047. But if our timeline is correct, and it is, then when David goes to actually get the ark, it's taking place in the year 1000 or 999 BC, some 47 years additional than that 20-year period. In other words, David is getting the ark some 67 or 68 years after the ark went into the house of Abinadab. Not 20 years. This is 40 plus years longer. And so we have a problem that we hope to solve. And of course, God does this in the Bible all the time. He gives what seems to be, at least on the surface, contradictory information. And that's when we have to search the scriptures and carefully examine everything that relates. And often we find the solution. There's always a solution. It's just we don't always find it. But there is a possibility we'll have to look at later. But now at this time, we're going to turn our attention to Kirjath-Jearim and study what the Bible has to say about that place and what they might represent, these inhabitants of Kirjath-Jearim, as they willingly come to take the ark to their city, despite the fact that so many have just died in Beth Shemesh. But we'll take a look at that when we get together for our next Bible study.